For some sound advice now on the programme, we have Fevzi, the Gadget Detectives. Nice to talk to you this afternoon. Thank you for joining us on the programme.
Pleasure.
Now, first of all, let's start with some gadget-related news. Gadget of the week.
Gadget of the week, yeah. So, this is a notebook computer, and I've been reviewing this now for quite a while. And for quite a while, if you really wanted a small, svelte sort of, dare I say, it's sexy bit of kit, You'd look to Apple. Apple more or less had it all their own way in terms of the sort of the high-end stuff that you'd have a visceral reaction to. Now, that's no longer the case. I've been reviewing a notebook computer from Dell. It's called a Dell XPS 13. And it's a small notebook computer. So to give you an idea, it's 12 inches wide, just under 8 inches deep, and about a third of an inch thick. So it's a very svelte thing. And yet, despite the fact it's 12 inches wide, they've managed to fit a 13.3-inch screen into this small box, and they've done it by the frame that goes around the screen is normally quite thick on a laptop. It's normally about an inch wide. They've made it so that it's almost completely absent. The screen almost goes edge to edge, which is quite remarkable. And what they've done with it is they've made a very high definition screen. There's an option to make it a touch screen, so if you're used to using machines like tablets and so forth, you can interact with Windows 10 in a similar way. The weight is about 1.2 kilos, which is not featherweight, but given that it's a full power computer, I mean, this is a full power computer that will do everything that you really need to do on your average PC. It just happens to be in a very small package. And then when they add to that about 11 hours of battery life, I was very impressed by this, and I thought I would share this with you.
It's one of those things that on the surface just sounds impossible. 13.3-inch screen in the size of an 11-inch notebook. It's one of those things that you think, no, that can't work.
Well, the reason for that is that, bear in mind, 13.3 inches relates to the diagonal measurement from, say, bottom left to top right-hand corner. So the width of the screen from, you know, bottom left to bottom right would be less. But still, what that means is, it, as I say, the lid is almost all screen. The one downside, the only criticism I have of this, and I can understand why they've done it, the bezel, this frame around the screen, is so small, there's no room at the top for a webcam. So they've put it in the bottom left-hand corner below the screen. And the only problem with that is it tends to give you a rather unflattering angle, mostly up one's nose. So that's not ideal. But if you're really worried about that, you can get a very small separate webcam and just hook it to the top of the screen if that's what you really want. But just be aware that, you know, you may be shot from an unflattering angle by your webcam. But I was really struck by this, Sarah, was that there's really no compromises. The processor, for those that know, is an i5 or an i7, which means mid-range or higher processor. The amount of RAM in it is 8 or 16 gigabytes. A lot of machines still selling with only 4. It doesn't have any moving hard drive in it. It's got a solid-state drive, which is up to a terabyte of storage, which is huge for a solid-state drive with no moving parts. First of all, that makes it lightning quick because there's no disk spinning inside it. It's all no moving parts, and it means it will start up quickly, it will shut down quickly, and it will perform snappily. In terms of price, it's not cheap, but you know, I've seen worse. Let's say it starts at £849, and it goes up to about £1,400, depending on whether you want the touchscreen and all the bells and whistles.
But inevitably, if you wait a bit, these things do come down quite significantly, don't they?
They do, although I would have to say those prices I notice are on offer, and they might go up by a couple of hundred quid in some cases. So, but yes, in the medium term, absolutely yes. And it was interesting, for example, when Apple made some product announcements a week ago today, that some of the prices were bordering on reasonable. And it's the first time that we've seen Apple prices bordering on reasonable as opposed to, you know, Rolls-Royce levels. I think, you know, even Apple and certainly Dell and others are trying to make these features affordable. And certainly the solid-state disk drive that, as I said to you, is much faster than the conventional disk drives. These things used to be really high-end devices even 12 or 18 months ago. Now they're cheap as chips. I mean, literally, if you pardon the pun, they are extremely cheap. And probably, if you've got a laptop or a desktop computer yourself and it's a few years old, probably one of the best and most effective upgrades you could make to it would be to swap out the old-fashioned rotating hard drive with one of these solid-state devices, and they've really become very affordable.
Let's go now to the phones then, and to Keith from Walton, who has a question for you. Keith, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Sarah. First time we've spoken, I believe.
Yeah, very nice to hear you on the programme. So what's your problem? You've called in with a problem.
Yes, I'm told I've got to be on my best behaviour, no flouncing.
Right, good, no flouncing.
Hi, Fezzy.
Hello, Keith.
We spoke once before about my washing machine, but the manufacturer has never got back to me on that one.
Really? Let's name them. Who were they?
Oh, it begins with a Z, but I'm not going to be more specific than that.
Okay, fine.
I've got a problem with Outlook 2010 under Windows. It just doesn't start up under Windows 7, sorry. It kind of hangs, briefly shows the folders, and then stops with saying it's Microsoft Outlook has stopped working, Windows is checking for a solution, Microsoft Outlook is trying to recover your information, this may take several minutes, then it's just said it's stopped again.
Yep.
I've tried with running it with /safe, and I've tried running it with /resetNavPane.
Right.
Neither of which does any good.
Okay.
I just wonder what I might do.
All right.
Online, it tends to say things like resetting bits of registry, which sounds very frightening to me, to be honest.
Yeah, you don't ideally want to be doing that. I mean, has Outlook 10 been previously working for you and then ceased to work, or was it you went to Outlook 2010 and then had the problem?
No, I've had this for quite some time. I had a lot of emails in there. It generally opens up more than one mailbox, and it's been fine. I've actually cleaned up quite a bit some weeks ago, so there's actually fewer messages in there than before.
Okay. All right, Keith. So the important thing here is your data, because it's quite possible that Outlook 2010 has... And by the way, 2010 does work on Windows 7, as you know. I've also run that version of Outlook with that version of Windows, and it runs fine when it's behaving itself. So it's not a fundamental compatibility issue. However, it may be that one of two things may have happened. Either that the installation has become corrupted, or there is other software running in the background which is interfering with it opening and running correctly. Now, either way, the first thing that you need to do, if you haven't already done this, is make sure you have a backup of all your data. For those that don't know what Outlook is a program that can take care of your email, your appointments, and your contact lists. So it can have your core data. People run whole businesses using Outlook, and if they were to lose that data, it's a major problem. Now, luckily, as you, Keith, you'll probably know this, but I'll mention it for the benefit of our listener. Outlook stores all the data in a single file, and it's what's called a .pst file. That's Papa Sierra Tango. So it will be something like outlook.pst. You need to find that file and back it up. Make a copy of it onto an external drive. It can be one of the largest files that's on your computer, but you should back it up, and back it up twice. You know, put it on two different things and put one of them in a different location, just in case, you know, the worst happens. So it's important to do that. Once you've done that, my suggestion would be to actually take Outlook off that computer and just reinstate it. If you have the original disks, or you can download the image and just reinstate it from scratch, do that, because it just sounds to me like it's likely to be corrupted. One thing that you could try, Keith, before doing that is just do what's called a safe mode boot. So you start Windows up in what's called safe mode, tapping the F8 key every few seconds as you switch on the computer. That safe mode, again, for those that don't know, is a very basic, bare-bones version of Windows, which is normally used for diagnostics. And what it does is it stops all the other bits of program and processes that often start up with the computer from starting up. And so you can see if any of those are responsible for interfering with Outlook. Because if you start up in safe mode and then start Outlook and it works, then the odds are that it's something else that's interfering with it. If it doesn't work, then the odds are it's a corruption and you should uninstall and reinstall, having done your backup.
Right, okay. I don't think I've got a CD. The last time I tried to find Outlook on the internet, I couldn't find anywhere to download it. This was about 3 or 4 years ago.
Mm.
So I'm a bit dubious about how I'm going to be able to do that. I understand what you're saying about safe mode.
Yeah.
And I should be able to find the PST file.
Yes, I mean, just do a quick search for star.pst and it will give you all the PST files on there.
I was
there.
Just doing that while you were talking, actually.
Yeah, yeah, so you'll find it. And that's good advice anyway, Keith, because, forgive me, it's not very modest to say that's good advice, but it's a good thing to do because, you know, there are lots of pieces of malware out there that come under the heading of what's called ransomware, where they will infect your computer and silently encrypt all your data, including your outlook.psd file, and then announce themselves to you once they've done it and ask you for a few hundred pounds of money, hence the term ransomware, in order to unlock and release your files back to you. And the only really good way of defending yourself against that is to have up-to-date backups, which are stored away from the computer, not on a disk that's attached permanently to the computer, because those will also then be encrypted in that way. So it's something you need to do. In terms of getting hold of Outlook, you can actually approach Microsoft for a disk. You need your own license key, but the actual disk is available from Microsoft. And I believe it's a download from their support section as well.
Well, some really interesting advice. Does that help, Keith?
Well, kind of, yes. I used to be an email administrator years ago, and I sort of knew the things to look for, but just been frustrating in that I don't actually have the CD, and I have tried to download it before, so... Mm.
Speak to Microsoft about it, you know, because it is available. You may have to pay a few dollars for it, but as long as you've got your own key, that's your license to say that you've bought a copy of it at some point and entitled to use it, then you can just get a vanilla version of it, as it were, and just attach it to your own key.
Well, let's Keith, thank you very much for your call. We'll take a slight break with some music, and then we'll come back taking a look with Fevzy the Gadget Detective at some of the technical news that has been hitting the headlines that have Roxette and Must Have Been Love. And joining us on the line, we've got another question for you, Fevzy. This is Jack in Brighton. Hi, Jack.
Hi there, Sarah.
This is a mobile phone related question.
Yes. Hi there, Fevzy.
Afternoon,
yeah.
Jack.
Yeah, on my mobile phone, I've got the Wi-Fi switched on,
yes.
Right, and I'm out and about, and I take a lot of photos, etc. And if I'm in the middle of taking a photo, often I'll get my mobile phone will suddenly slow down and grind to halt, and then a message will pop up that it's detected open networks, open Wi-Fi spots, or whatever. Yes.
Yeah.
Which, you know, and obviously. If the photo I'm taking, there's something moving, whatever, and it takes quite a long time, this message, and while it's appearing and whatever, it's like 5 seconds or 10. So obviously I've missed the photo or whatever, and it's just annoying. And I've tried to look... I've looked at the Wi-Fi settings on my phone, and there are sort of two main options. There's the Wi-Fi on-off option,
yep.
And there's an option called network identification... Network notification, and that's got that says it notify me when an open network is available. And I've tried switching that off, because that one looks like the relevant option to maybe try and switch those messages off.
Right. Okay. So, Jack, my feeling is that you need to be careful about what you allow to attach to your mobile phone by Wi-Fi. So, really, you should only be using Wi-Fi when you mean to be using it, not leave the Wi-Fi switched on all the time. And there's a couple of reasons for that. One is leaving the Wi-Fi on your phone switched on all the time will kill the battery life. Okay, it will make it last a lot less. But also, you need to really make a conscious decision about connecting to a particular Wi-Fi hotspot or not. So you could actually just switch off the Wi-Fi altogether until you need to, because it's using processor, it's using battery to connect up, and it does put your machine at risk, because there is a lot of credence to the opinion that says that actually you should be very careful about connecting to Wi-Fi hotspots in general anyway. It's very easy. There's software available on the internet free of charge that allows me, sitting in the same, say, coffee shop as you, to attach to your machine and have a look around whilst you are happily surfing the internet or sending an email. And the only way really to keep yourself secure whilst you're using Wi-Fi in a public space like that is to use a service called a VPN, a virtual private network, which then allows you to send your data down a sort of secure tunnel to the website that you're contacting. So my advice to you, Jack, would be to switch off the Wi-Fi when you're not actually trying to use Wi-Fi, and when you are using Wi-Fi, maybe consider using a VPN. Certainly the other setting that you mentioned should help somewhat, because it should stop it from automatically logging you on, but still
I don't think it's logging me on. I don't log on to these Wi-Fi spots. It's just I think it's an option to notify you about open. What it says on my phone here, it says network notification, notify me when an open network is available. So I'm not actually connecting to them. It's just coming up with a message saying it's detected these open networks, but it's in the middle of me taking a photo, and it messes that up. But I just wondered, should that option, do you think, switch off the messages?
Yes, it should. But the surer solution, and I'm not sure why it isn't doing that, you're quite right. The surer solution and the better solution is to turn the Wi-Fi off anyway. Unless you're making a conscious choice to use Wi-Fi in a particular location, keep it switched off. It's safer for you, and it's better for you in terms of as a safety.
I mean, it's not that I'm using it a lot out and about. It's just that, let's say, wherever I use it, I probably won't automatically switch it off. I'll just forget or whatever, and then I'll be taking some photos, and then these messages will pop up, and then it messes those up.
You need to just take the trouble to turn it off, and also, you know, maybe even stop any apps that you've got running in the background that you don't need to have running. You could turn those off, and just it will just give more of the resources over to the camera. Smartphones, Jack, are wonderful things, but they are a bit of a jack of all trades, and the problem with that is that, you know, it's only got one processor and one set of memory, and you don't want to spread that too thinly, and you don't want to be interrupted. Some of the things that interrupt the processor don't notify you that they're interrupting it, but still it will affect the performance of the camera. So when you're using it as a camera, switch off the other stuff.
Jack, thanks so much for your call. We're going to have to stop it there. Thanks so much, Fevzi. Great to hear from you this afternoon as well, the Gadget Detective.